It's a real honor and a pleasure for me to be able to introduce Brother Carl W. Beener to you fine people. Brother Beener was born in Stuttgart, Germany in 1898. He came to America and has made a wonderful record in the church and in business. I'm not going to say very much about him because he can very well speak for himself and does. He was formerly a member of the presiding bishopric. At the present time, he is a member of the general superintendency of the Young Men's Mutual Improvement Association. I think he's also president of the new bank in Salt Lake, the Beehive State Bank. It's a pleasure to have him with us. He's a great influence in the church, particularly among the young people. He loves the young people. And most of all, he loves the church and the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's an honor for us to have him, and we welcome him. And it's a pleasure to introduce him to you at this time.
I had really felt when I became an unemployed general authority of the church that I would not enjoy this privilege any longer. 6 months ago, this happened to me. I'm grateful to Superintendent Bentley for giving me at least a part-time job in the church. I'm still available for some other small assignments if any should be around. I received one very interesting letter. I received many, but one very interesting letter at the time of my release from a man in Malad, Idaho, who said on Sunday morning of the general conference at which you were released, our entire family were listening to the conference session. And at the close of the session, I thought I would test my youngsters to see how well they had listened. And I said to them, "Now, which of all of the talks this morning did you enjoy the most?" And he said, each one expressed himself, and my youngest daughter, 8 years of age, says, "Daddy, I like best the man who just left the church." Well, Brother Bentley has me back in again. We've just sat at the feet of our general authorities in another great general conference of the church, where the living water came from their lips, and I'm sure we were all inspired and thrilled by the messages of the conference and also of this international character that the church has taken on since stakes have been organized in these foreign lands. Superintendent Bentley and I were in a meeting last Monday with about 150 or 160 of these leaders. We sang songs in four or five languages at the same time. Earphones were worn by those of the different languages, and while the speaker in front was speaking, the translated message came to each in their own tongue. It was just a marvelous thing, and I'm thrilled to see here some of these from Samoa. We had in our home last night some from the Stuttgart stake, two members of the stake presidency and two bishops of that stake. I marvel at what's happening in the church. At the time I was released, I gathered together a few statistics to see what had happened during the 9.5 years I was a member of the presiding bishopric. And I was amazed at those statistics. Not that I personally had anything to do with the growth, but just to pause occasionally and reflect and see what's happening gives us some idea of what the future is going to be. And during the conference, some of these things were verified, but I discovered in the 9.5 years I was there, the church grew by 550,000 members. Now, that's nearly a third of the entire population of the church in 9.5 years. That meant it took 122 years to get the other two-thirds. And then we learned at conference, as we heard the statistics, that in 1961 we grew by over 130,000, over 88,000 of which were converts from the missions of the church. Well, now we just project ahead a little. It means to me that in the next 3 years we'll have another 500,000 members of the church. And if our missionary work accelerates at the rate that it's going, it might not be long before we'll have 500,000 new members on our records every year, or it could even be greater than this. This is a tremendous organization, and we're certainly on the way to great things. Hearing some of the mission presidents report, President Tuttle, who presides over 5 missions in South America, indicated to us that there are now 20,000 members of the church in these 5 South American missions, and that 10,000 of them came on our records in 1961. Now, if this doubles again in 1962, we'll see stakes dotted all over the South American countries. President Tanner reported that more than 17,000 were brought into the church in the West European missions, and something like 13,000 came into the church in the European missions, 30,000 in Europe. And it's been predicted that there'll be approximately 25 more stakes organized over in Europe in the next year, or not to exceed in the next 18 months' time. Does this give you a little picture of what's happening? In 9.5 years, we doubled the number of wards in the church and nearly doubled the number of stakes we had in the church. Now, you project this thinking a little in the future, and you get some idea of what's going to happen. President Brockbank, when he was here at the missionary seminar, gave us a little history of the new Scottish-Irish mission and said the area in which this mission is located, prior to 2 years ago, provided the church with approximately 16 converts per year. In 1961, this same area brought into the church over 4,500 converts, so many that there's now been approved already a new Scottish stake with headquarters at Glasgow, Scotland. And the work is so successful in this area that they've divided the area and have now created an Irish mission and a Scottish mission. Well, I'm tremendously impressed, and I know you are. As the church grows, so will this great institution grow, and the international flavor is going to increase. And how all of this is going to be supervised and directed, I have no idea, and I'm not going to be asked about it either now. So they won't get the benefit of my thinking on these things, but I'm sure that the Spirit will prompt and direct those who have the great work to do. I was in Europe 2 years ago, and I met President Brossard of the French mission, and I learned in his mission that in 1959, they'd had just a few over 100 converts that year. In 1960, 1 year later, that exceeded 1,200, an increased percentage of nearly 1,200% in 1 year's time. And I think that more than doubled last year. Now there are 2 missions where there was only one in 1960. It's tremendous what's happening. And while this is going on the outside through our great missionary system, the internal growth of the church, the internal activity of the church is also most noteworthy. Ward teaching has doubled in the last 9.5 years, the visits we make into the homes of members of the church. And I like to think the effectiveness of the messages left in the homes of members has also increased tremendously. Our sacrament meeting attendance has all but doubled. I remember when I was the bishop of a ward and thought we had a very fine ward, our sacrament meeting attendance was 17%. And this was a little better than the church average. And at that time, we were challenged, every bishop in the church, by Elder LeGrand Richards, who was then the presiding bishop, who said any bishop who didn't have at least 25% attendance at sacrament meeting should be embarrassed, and I was one of those embarrassed. Well, within 30 days, we got beyond 25% by directing some activity in this respect. Now the church average is 38% attendance, the church average. And it'll be higher than this in another year, 2 years. We're on our way to great things, and this is the way it should be. At home in our organizations, we've got to keep up with the work that's being done by those on the outside bringing new converts into the church. And among these are wonderful people. Many ministers of the gospel have been converted to Mormonism, and some have become stalwarts in our church. I think in times past I've related some of the experiences of some of those who've been here. And I've heard individual testimonies of some missionaries that have just been tremendous. A father came and told me one day of his son who was laboring in Austria. He said he was tracting in a rather nice area. He was greeted at the door by a distinguished-looking gentleman. As he was telling the man who he was and something about the great message he'd come thousands of miles to deliver, the man looked down at the boy and said, "I see you have a frayed shirt collar on. Could you use a new shirt?" And the elder said, "Show me any missionary that couldn't use a new shirt." And with this, he was invited into the home. He discovered the man was a shirt manufacturer. He fixed him up with a dozen new shirts that fit him, and in pay for this, within 3 days, the young elder converted the man and his wife and children to the church. And because the man was one of sort of prominent standing and had many close friends, he said, "I want you to deliver this message to every one of these friends. I'll get in touch with them. I'll tell them that I'm sending you, and I want them to listen to you." And he gave him the address of 54 people. And the father of this boy says, "I think he's going to baptize 42 of the 54. All because he had a frayed shirt collar on." Well, we've often heard that the Lord works in mysterious ways. He's wonders to perform. But this was one of the ways. I heard the story of a young man. As a matter of fact, I read the letter that he'd sent to his father. His father and I are very close friends. The boy had had 1 year of French in high school. He was sent to the French mission. He'd been there just 60 days when he received a new companion who couldn't speak one word of French, but the two went out tracting together. He said, "We came to a home that was opened by a woman. We told her who we were and that we had a great message we'd like to leave." And he said, "I could see we weren't going to last long here." The door slowly began to close. And then it opened again. And he said, "I'm sure the only reason it opened again was because the woman recognized we were foreigners and she was enjoying how we were murdering the French language." We'd been told by our mission president, if we ever felt the door closing in our face, we should bear our testimony. And he said, "I began bearing my testimony the best I could in the French language and just concluded when the door closed in our face." We walked off the steps and were about two-thirds of a block up the street when we heard the voice of a little child say, "Come back. Come back. My father wants you to come back." And he walked up and took a hold of the hand of each of these elders and turned them around. And he said, they took us right back to the same door. But when we got there this time, the man of the house was standing at the door. And he said to the boys, "You don't know this, but while one of you were bearing your testimony of a great message that has come to the earth in these latter days, I was standing behind the door. When my wife closed the door in your face, I said, 'We must get these young men back. We've got to know more about this great message.' And of course, they were invited in. And they came again the next night and the third night. On the fourth night, seven members of this family were baptized, members of the church, and the letter said, day after tomorrow, we're going to baptize four more that live in the second house down the street. Well, it's marvelous what's happening. If this had happened while I was on a mission, I'd have thought the millennium had come. But now this seems to be a common occurrence, and it's happening just about every day in the lives of these wonderful young men. I'm thrilled that I'm still associated with the youth of the church. After all, who are these missionaries? Boys and girls, 19, 20, 21 years of age, who haven't had particularly special training in seminars, but they've been associated and affiliated with the Aaronic priesthood and with our auxiliary organizations. They've sort of come up through the ranks as faithful, qualified young people to go out into the world and preach the gospel. And they can stand in the presence of ministers and great men, and with their humble testimonies, clothed with the power with which they've been sent out in the world to preach the gospel, wield this influence that's bringing these thousands and thousands of wonderful persons into the folds of the church, the truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Well, Brother Bentley and I and the rest of our MIA organization have something to do with some of these young people, and we thrill every time we hear stories concerning them, and particularly of their great success in the preaching of the gospel. I hope this will continue, and I'm sure that the 10,000 who are out in the world now will be supplemented by probably another 5,000 before the year's over. And if they're as successful as the 10,000 are, and if the 10,000 are added upon a little, you do the figuring. And you tell us how fast this church is going to grow. I think there's hardly a person in this building that would ever have realized that we would have seen the progress that we're observing right now. And then when I see people come from all over the world to sit at the feet of our prophets and drink in the messages to take back to those thousands of miles away from here, you sit in their presence and you listen to them, and they will tell you that they literally were just lifted right up in the air to be sitting in this great Salt Lake Tabernacle in a general conference of the church. You can just imagine the enthusiasm they're going to carry back now to their own stakes and their own wards in these faraway places. Well, I think back a few years, and it wasn't long ago, before we, in most of our missions, had converts ranging up to 30, 40, 50, once in a while up to 100 converts in a mission, and we thought this was a marvelous thing. Here now we're talking into thousands. In the Northwest last spring, just a year ago now, while attending a quarterly conference, I observed two young missionaries come into our meeting, and I invited them up on the stand and had them each bear their testimony. And one of these young elders said to the quarterly conference audience, "We have set as a goal in the Northwestern States Mission this year 7,000 convert baptisms." 7,000 in one mission in this country. Why, it wasn't many years ago when 7,000 was all we had in the entire church through our united missionary efforts. And when the second young man stood up, he said, "And I'd like to report on what Elder so-and-so said, that we're right on schedule. We're baptizing 600 every month." Well, I watched the record. I observed that they led the entire church with something over 5,200 convert baptisms in this past year. And so the great work is rolling forward, and we're part of it. Now, from 30, 40, 50, or 60, to get up into these thousands, and I suppose we have very few missions in the church anymore that don't have at least 1,000 baptisms. And it's going from there up into these astronomical figures. You can see what this means to the church in the way of building new buildings, officering these tremendous organizations, supervising the work all over the world. The work isn't going to get any easier for those who have the responsibility of keeping the church organized in all of these stakes and wards and branches, and in bringing the message of encouragement to them once every quarter at quarterly conference. Maybe they're only going to have a visitor once every other time, and it may only be once a year if this accelerated work keeps going, and I'm sure every one of us hope that it continues. Now, I wanted to say just a few words about another little experience I enjoyed a while ago. I was a member of a panel where we had about 1,500 youth of the stake who had sent in questions to be answered. I'm not going to answer questions, but I thought I'd ask a few. You have the finest panel sitting out in front of me here to answer your questions, and I'm sure many of you have had thoughts go through your minds similar to those who were presented at this panel. Young people do some deep thinking and some serious thinking, and they want to be right in their thinking. And while in a panel such as the one I participated in, only a few questions out of about 200 or 250 that were submitted could be answered, I couldn't help but think, as I came down this morning with the caliber of the faculty of this great university, that young people here certainly can get answers to questions that come to their mind and get the right answers. One or two of these are on scientific matters, and I indicate again I'm only going to read some of them to you. This is one: how does the LDS Church stand, or what are your personal opinions and the problems of the correlation between Darwin's theory of evolution and the first chapter of Genesis? Have any of you ever wondered about this? I heard a great scientist say, just remember that Darwin's was a theory. The Lord's is the truth. I thought that was a pretty good answer for one that isn't any wiser than I am on these things. I have heard many theories on the life on other planets. I would like to have some professional opinion on this. Here's the professionals right out here if any of you have questions like this. We have seen pictures in encyclopedias, etc., showing how the cavemen supposedly looked. Did Adam and Eve look anything like this? Well, I wasn't there, so I can't tell you how they looked, but someone may know something about this. Many questions arise in the minds of young people from time to time that cause doubt. What can we do that will satisfy ourselves on these questions of doubt? And I think several of the talks of the General Conference were directed to this, and they were outstanding. If you didn't get the message then, they'll be in the improvement era in another month or two, and you read some and you'd have an answer then. This one I thought was rather interesting. Since the church teaches that the knowledge we gain in this life rises with us, what will a mechanic do in the hereafter? Ever since I've read that, I've wondered what an old broken down cement man would do in the hereafter, too. That gets it into my category. But we believe in a literal resurrection, and I hope we all get there, and I'm sure we'll be assigned something we can do when we get there. Why should we pray when alone? Now, I didn't know, if anyone didn't know the answer to that. There's one here, I've got to quit right away, but one that I thought got kind of close to you, and I wanted to read that one for your benefit, if I can find it here. Is it possible that IBM will replace the BYU for matchmaking? I guess this could happen. What do you think? What if you think you have a bad reputation by going around with some kids who do have awful reputations, but you don't do the bad things that they do? Yet, what if you don't want to stop going around with those kids because they're the most popular kids in the school? And if you stop going around with those youngsters, they'll rib you about your thinking that you're too good for them. Please, what should I do? I'm just reading these so that the panel out here will be aware of some of the questions might come to them. If a person asks you to do something on Sunday, should you just say no? Or no, because this is Sunday? This question also applies to other problems along the same line. If you like a boy real well and he finally asks you out, should you give him a goodnight kiss? Then in parentheses it says, he has been used to this with other girls and expects it. You're not quite sure. I imagine you could start by letting him kiss you on the forehead or something like that and work down to... Well, I'd better quit. One or two little things, though. I mean, quit on this here, and I've got a minute or two left. One, I wonder sometimes how much these teachings really get inside of us, these wonderful teachings we hear. I heard that a man was interviewed one day, and a person said to him, if you had two houses, would you give one to a person in need who has no house? And the man said, yes, I think I would. And the man said, well, if you had two cars and you discovered someone who had no car, who really needed a car, would you give him one of your cars? And the man said, yes, I think I would. He said, well, if you had two horses and you knew someone that loved a horse but couldn't afford a horse, didn't have a horse, would you give him a horse? He says, well, I don't think I would. He says, you don't think you would? Why, a horse is much less expensive than a house. And an automobile, why wouldn't you? He says, well, you see, I have two horses. We're thinking about a little, isn't it? When our religion comes down to the real test, where are we? I might tell you this instead of reading what I was going to. A year ago last Christmas, I went out on a little project where I had an employee. It was a very cold day, just two or three days before Christmas. And as I was visiting with him, he sort of admired the overcoat I was wearing. He said, my, that's a good-looking coat. And as he was eyeing it up and down, I said, how'd you like to have it? He said, me? And I took the coat off and I put it on him and I said, it's yours. You know, that man nearly fainted. I nearly froze, but I never... Never did anything that made me happier for Christmas, I think, in my whole life. I wonder how deep this thing gets into our soul. All this tremendous work going on, does it register all the way? God bless you, wonderful people. It's certainly a thrill to be with you. It always becomes a thrill when you're through. I hope sometime in the future, while I don't expect to ever be invited to speak to you again, I will at least have the opportunity of coming to your campus and catching the flavor and the spirit that's always so prevalent here. And so let me close by saying, peace be with you. I have a wonderful testimony of this great latter-day work. Live close to the teachings of our Heavenly Father, and He'll bless you, and He'll magnify you, and the future for you can be bright and wonderful. I leave you these blessings and my testimony in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.